This is All Things Considered on 90.1 WABE. I'm Dennis O'Hare. This week, BBC's NewsHour has been in Atlanta and on Wednesday broadcasting from the studios of 90.1 WABE. They've been getting Atlanta's take on everything from Obamacare to a new stadium to the proper regalia for tailgating at a football game. Tim Franks is the presenter of NewsHour, one of several presenters for NewsHour. He has been with us in our studios. Tim, good to have you.
Well, it's been an enormous pleasure. Thank you very much for having me here.
As you've been taking the temperature of folks here, including the governor, on Obamacare, how strange is it to hear this debate coming from a country where a single-payer system has been institutionalized for quite a while?
It's not just strange, it is phenomenally complicated for an outsider like me. I may have sounded calm on the outside when I was trying to talk to people about the Affordable Care Act and what it was going to mean for them and the political debate about it. But just to begin to understand what the healthcare system looks like at the moment, how it works, how the different entitlements that do exist work, who qualifies. Before you then get into the absolutely toxic political debate about it, I mean, it is something which is difficult. I'm sure it's immensely difficult for journalists, print journalists and broadcasters here in the United States, but for international broadcasters, all the more difficult. I think the thing that I've been carrying with me all through this, though, and I hope we've told our listeners around the world, is that, correct me if I'm wrong, but this feels like the most important single piece of domestic legislation that's going to come out of this administration across two terms. And indeed, I read one newspaper saying that this is the single most important piece of social legislation in our lifetime. So, you know, it is immensely complex. It is immensely poisonous, the debate, but you get a sense that it's important.
Certainly a lot of journalists feel like, and I'm one of them, the more I get into this, the less I understand. But at the core of all of this complicated debate, isn't there a very simple proposition, which is there or is there not in this country a right to health care? Isn't that sort of the predicate for everything else?
Absolutely. But I think the rider to that is that, is there an affordable right to health care? Is it practical? And there are those who, support the idea of the Affordable Care Act, who say, look, not only is it a right, but actually it is immensely affordable, because once you get all these extra people signed on, then in fact costs will come down, because the cost of premiums will be spread and hospital costs will come down, because hospitals won't face uncompensated care of poor people and so on. There are others who say, and we heard it in detail from the governor of the state, Nathan Deal, that that's pie in the sky economics, and that the point about these things is that these are entitlements. It's a ratchet, and once people buy into them, it's impossible to wind it back. It's impossible to control.
But the key to it, as you just mentioned, is getting as many people as possible involved, and there is a mandate there, at least to some degree, because if people don't sign up, there's a fine. Now, some people will choose to pay that rather than to get into the system. But I just want to read you something from Jack Staver, who's the chair of something called the Northwest Georgia 912 Project. And it opposes the Affordable Care Act. It opposes the advocacy for it from people like the AARP, American Association for Retired Persons. And he said it's not the government's responsibility to be the nanny. They're telling us everybody has to have health care. There are people who don't want healthcare. Then he says there shouldn't be a mandate from the government. This is why we got out of England.
I can think of a million good reasons why you got out of England, as he rather delightfully put it. But yes, I mean, you're right. There's undoubtedly a strong strain of opinion that we've heard in our time here, which is that it is about freedom and it is about the right to choose and it is about small government. So yes, hugely important though this is in itself, it does play into a much bigger ideological argument. And of course it also plays into politics in Washington. It's something that you came on our program and explained very lucidly, that it's all very well and, you know, it was very healthy and salutary for us to get the view from Atlanta. But, you know, that only goes so far, because all roads do lead back to Washington, and the fight in Congress is really going to shape what here in Atlanta and across the United States is going to see in real terms.
Does your audience in Britain look at us and say, what are they talking about? What are they arguing about? Would you ever have heard something like what Mr. Staver said in the UK?
In the UK, there is, and anybody who's heard parliamentary debate will understand that there is knockabout stuff, and there is furious political argument to be had. One of the key things, though, that I often say to people in the UK and indeed around the world, but I guess especially in the UK, because of our common language, is that, you know, America is a foreign country as far as the UK is concerned. I think that there are a lot of misapprehensions in Britain, especially across Europe to an extent, but in Britain especially, about the US because of our common language and to an extent our common history before it was interrupted. And I think people are often sort of surprised and slightly hostile about what happens here in the US, because there is not an understanding that this is a country with a rich and glorious history that has diverged very happily from Britain and the rest of the world for the last 230 years.
Speaking of which, I'm going to quickly shift to the debate over Syria. And you talked to veterans, to refugees, to people who've been watching this very closely about what the U.S. should do in Syria. Do you think that Americans, whether on the street or in Washington, were influenced by what happened in the House of Commons when they said, we are not going to be part of an intervention in Syria?
Oddly enough, my guess is that it was the White House that was particularly influenced by that, and that was one of the reasons why the administration decided initially that it was going to try and get approval for possible U.S. military intervention from Congress. To be honest, out here, my pretty strong sense is that most people are simply fed up, tired, fearful, exhausted by the thought of further U.S. military intervention. They hate what's happening in Syria, but they're also very fearful about getting involved in it. And I think that's been the strongest motor.
And there certainly is the contrary view that is, and certainly in England it would be even stronger, having had a much closer look at World War II even than we did. If you allow someone to escalate to using chemical weapons on a wide scale, then what do you do? And then, okay, well then, if you do something, how is it going to work, or will it just make the problem worse? It's a very difficult dilemma.
Oh, hugely. And I think the one thing on which most people are unified, whether they're in favor of military intervention and against, whether they think that the outside world has been a help or a hindrance, is that they think that there really are no easy conclusions in Syria. It's looking like a ghastly, intractable civil war at the moment. Of course, there will be some sort of solution at the end, because there always is, but what shape Syria will be in by the end of that, what shape the region will be in by the end of that, who knows?
We've got just about a minute or two here. I'm going to make a hard turn to something I know you're interested in, which is sports. Had you ever seen anything like, and you come from a country where sports fans take it very seriously, all you have to do is go watch a Man City, Man U game to watch fans at their most frenzied. But did you ever see anything like the tailgating at the Georgia Dome?
The tailgating at the Georgia Dome was a new thing for me, I have to say. But it was a glorious new thing. It was just such a warm, warm experience. I have to confess, I am a huge fan of American football. I have been since I was a teenager. And, you know, one of the great joys of my life was actually seeing Walter Payton's last home game in Chicago in I think it was in 1987. I really needed very little persuasion to go along to see the Falcons, who I'm mispronouncing, against the Rams on Sunday. But the prelude to all that, which was spending some quality time with tailgaters in a car park just by the stadium, that just added to me.
Girl, I can't wait to watch you deal.
This is Tailgate Central, and they love fun.
There's a strong smell of beer and meat and the strong ambient sound of music, and it's 11 in the morning, and it's because football matters.
Football matters, and when it comes to football, you need that. You need food, you need beer, and you need friends.
And you are the best guide in the world in our own Rose Scott.
She was wonderful. She failed to score me any free food or drink, for which I berated her.
Well, maybe next time. Tim Franks, presenter of NewsHour. Tim will be listening for you every afternoon, and your colleagues at the BBC. We thank you so much for visiting us.
It's been a huge pleasure, Dennis. Thanks very much.